On the Ground is produced by the Global NGO Executive Committee, a storied nonprofit that has for 60 years partnered with the United Nations to guarantee a voice at the decision-making table for civil society leaders. GNEC offers services to more than 1,600 UN-vetted global NGOs, which are on the front lines of tackling the most pressing issues of our time. I'm Adrienne Berg, a member of the NGO Committee on Aging New York and the host of On the Ground. Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is On the Ground. Now, we have a very special week, special on so many levels, because this particular week is Podcast-a-thon. What does it mean? It means that we are highlighting really important organizations that have brought something to civil society. And this particular On the Ground podcast will be generated all over the world, and in many countries, even translated into other languages. At the same time, it's very special because we are honoring this month women, women's rights, the place of women in our civil society, and not only in the United States, but also internationally. And who better to help us along with that would be the League of Women Voters. You guessed it. We have Marcia Johnson. She is one of the chief attorneys and counsel of the League of Women Voters. She leads the organization's advocacy and litigation team, overseeing the strategic direction of their program. In other words, she's muscle. So now we're going to say hello to you after that introduction, Marcia, because I'm so excited to speak with you today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Now, honestly, I think most of our listeners do know the existence of the League of Women Voters, but it's got an incredible history and an incredible mission. So please tell us about it.
Yes, we're very proud of that history. So the League of Women Voters was founded 6 months before the passage of the 19th Amendment, giving women the right to vote in the U.S. in 1920. So we're over 100 years old. And from our inception, we've been conceived as a grassroots organization that fights for voting rights and the overall empowerment of women. And we do that in several ways, through education, advocacy, litigation, and organizing. So we take a very comprehensive approach to ensuring that women have a voice in our democracy.
Yes. Now, you know, I think most people see the League of Women Voters as a U.S.-based organization, but you really have a fairly big reach and a lot of impact. And I'll give everybody one example. Among the many things that Marcia has done, is that she was co-director of the Voting Rights Project at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights under law. She's also been on the Lawyers Committee's International Human Rights Initiatives. So how has what has been accomplished, and a lot has been accomplished by the League of Women Voters, spilled over into the civil society and into the international scene?
Yes, so, you know, the League of Women Voters has been involved with the United Nations and in the international space since 1946. And we really see this as an important venue to lift up both how we are doing democracy or how we're engaging as civil society in the U.S., but to support international treaties, obligations, build cross-cutting partnerships. One of the things that's particularly exciting for me, you know, meetings that the UN recently had on the Commission on the Status of Women, because you get to have these international conversations where you see the commonalities, both in the challenges that we're facing, but also have an opportunity to really engage collectively on how we can address those challenges and learn from each other across the globe. So we have found that our international engagement, and we have a group, a dedicated group of League members who we call our UN observers, who are part of that international community, lifting up what we're doing domestically and working in partnership to address challenges that we just face internationally as well.
So we're going to talk about the observers. And we're going to talk about observing here in the U.S., what might be challenging at the moment, and how that can spill over, how our solutions can spill over to the same sort of challenges that we face around the world. So don't you guys go anywhere.
It's the Hackathon, a month-long online event where teams develop projects to address the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. The mission is to educate and empower participants to create sustainability with technology. During the event, our partners will share their work and mission in workshops. Attending those workshops can help participants gain a better understanding of the SDGs and how their technical skill sets can contribute. The partners also provide internship, mentorship opportunities for event winners, fast-tracking an opportunity to form long-term friendships with experts and industry veterans, and winners are selected by a panel of 17 judges from GNEC and the United Nations and win substantial prizes. Want to know more about the hackathon? Well, listen to our hackathon podcast at gnec.ngo.
And now we're back and we're here with Marcia Johnson. And I've already introduced you, but there's such a long range of magnificent work that she's been doing. She is a nationally recognized leader on voting rights. She's testified before Congress and she's appeared on national media and now on our media. And of course, she's chief counsel for the League of Women Voters. Now, you talked about the fact that one of the roles that the League of Women Voters has at the United Nations is observing. I'd like to know from you, has there been any change recently, domestically and internationally, in what you've seen? And if there's been greater challenges, what are some of the solutions that might be applied that'll spill over to the same kinds of challenges worldwide?
Yeah, so one of the biggest challenges I think we're seeing, not just in the US, but across the world, is the challenge of having a robust democracy and engaging in that democracy. So here in the US, what we're seeing is that there are laws being passed or being promoted to make it harder for people to vote, to register, to vote, and then also to engage with our elected officials. And one of the things we've been seeing in the past weeks, you know, we're currently on congressional recess, and the people have been reaching out to their elected members when they go back to their districts from Washington, D.C., to let them know how they feel about the agenda that's being pursued right now in the U.S. And the members of Congress have been encouraged to avoid having these town halls, particularly the members in the majority party, because there's been a lot of anger expressed towards them. And so, you know, the challenge we're facing is making it harder to vote, and then being able to engage our elected officials. One of the things I would mention specifically is that there's a current piece of legislation that is under consideration in our Congress, which I call has the Orwellian name of the SAVE Act, and it's safeguarding American voter eligibility. But what it does, one of the things it does is requires documentary proof of citizenship in order to register and to be able to vote. And this will have a great disproportionate impact on women, because as you know, we change our names.
Yes.
And what we have, you know, is reflected on our birth certificates. It's not necessarily reflected on our current identification. And this is a law that's being introduced where there's absolutely no evidence that it's needed. We have a system in place where we register to vote and we show up to vote. And, you know, there's the argument that this law is needed to counter voter fraud, but there's no evidence of this fraud that the law is supposed to address. But yet the impact could be up to 69 million women in the US not being able to cast a ballot because of this documentary proof of citizenship. So that's just one example of the challenges we're facing, not just in policies that affect women, which is another challenge that we're affecting, whether it has to do with maternal health care, reproductive health, but also just accessing the ballot. And, we're seeing this as part of a trend where democracy overall is being challenged, and the role of women in to be able to participate vigorously in democracy is being challenged as well.
So, one of the things we like to do on the ground is we like to formulate solutions of what might work. And it's surprising that many NGOs that have absolutely nothing to do with voting rights anywhere in the world can model what you're doing and relate it to what they're doing. So, I'm going to ask you two questions here. First, it seems that one of the restrictions that's going on here that you just mentioned is a solution without a problem.
Right.
And that's one of the ways that you can have a talking points around that. Similarly, if you're trying to access representatives and there's cut and they're cutting off or avoiding cutting off or avoiding avenues and pathways to have that interaction, there are also talking points that you're probably creating so that people who do want access can do so in a civil way and perhaps open a door. So, when you, as the League of Women Voters, have, as you say, over 100 years of experience in opening doors and creating the talking points that work, how do you approach that? You must be approaching it in a way that makes sense, even, let us say, to the other side, so that things are working. What would you say is the golden thread there that you've been able to develop? Because it's really worked.
Yeah, so I will say that we have evolved first into an organization that has over 700 state and local leagues across the country. So we have what I like to refer to as democracy troops. We have a democracy army
Yes.
that can amplify the message and the goals of the league. Part of that is through education. So we have a platform called Vote 411, where voters can learn how to register to vote, where their polling place is, who's on the ballot, and what their issues are. And we also now, when we have challenges to our democracy and policies that undermine our democratic institutions, we're doing an education series. Here is how government should work. So, for example, we have a system of checks and balances in the United States. We feel, as the League of Women Voters currently, that Congress is not leaning into its authority under the checks and balances system. So, we have an education series. Here are the duties of Congress. And, we share that out with our members, with our partners, with the general public. So you mentioned, having the talking points, being able to arm our citizens with the information that they need. So when they do reach out to their members, they have very concrete information. And the other thing we do is we have what we call action alerts that we send out to not just our members, but our partners. Here is how you can get in touch with your member of Congress. Here are ways to talk about how the laws that are being contemplated or are being passed affect your life. We have community meetings with partners so we can have a collective voice. We work very much in coalition with partners across the country. So they're not just hearing from the League of Women Voters, but they're hearing from a collective affected or individuals represented by our various organizations who are working in coalition to address issues. And that's part of our organizing. We recently had a Light for Democracy events across the country, where we organized 79 events across the
Just
country
only 79. All right. That's a lot of events.
in a 2-week period
Oh,
because of our reach and because of the partnerships that we have. And we were able to, each of our leagues shape those events into what works for their community. And we basically had the common message of, we want to have a viable multicultural democracy that works for everyone. And that's the message we shared with our elected officials. And we also engage in litigation. So
yes.
when laws that are passed that make it harder for people to vote and, and for women to vote, we bring cases either in state courts or in federal courts. So what we use is a multi-prong approach to addressing issues, not just one thing, but each complementing the other. Our communications, messaging, complementing our advocacy, which complements our organizing. And then when we need to, bringing in litigation, because the first three things, the communications, the organizing, and the advocacy, that builds a record that
Yes,
supports the
the
litigation that
litigation.
we do as well.
So this is a powerhouse organization for anyone who didn't realize it and just thinks that it's there for, during, let's say, voting season to help people navigate and get to the polls. It's certainly a lot more than that. It's also a shaping and advocacy organization. Don't you guys go anywhere.
Are you interested in high-quality online SDG education programs at no cost and with a flexible schedule? Through the Global NGO Education Committee, GNEC, and Rutgers Preparatory School, the Innovation Academy is offering a variety of programs that address both local and global challenges that should be of interest to you. It provides an NGO a virtual platform for online courses and programs from top schools and other organizations designed for every grade level from world-class educators. Take advantage of this amazing opportunity to expand your knowledge, be connected, be inspired by NGO leaders and educators. You will get all the information you need at the Innovation Academy at GNEC, GNEC.NGO.
And now we are back and we are honoring the issues that have to do with women. Of course, we're speaking with the League of Women Voters and in that capacity, Marcia Johnson, who is the chief counsel. But you've been on many, many committees that really relate to what's going on at the UN. And one of them was a Lawyers International Committee on compliance for some of these treaties or conventions. And was there an issue or two or a story that you would like to tell about some compliance issue that you ran across or how you as a committee decided to approach this issue of compliance? This is a major, major barrier to getting the treaties in the first place. So tell us what your experience has been.
I'll start answering your question by saying one of the things that's been particularly beneficial for the work I've done with treaty compliance and treaty engagement is the fact that the treaty exists at all, right? So this is a long story, but I'll try to make it as short as possible.
We
The
love
way I got
stories.
in
Go ahead.
the way I got into working on international treaty obligations is because the United States has a very narrow view, and the jurisprudence really restricts how we talk about the impact of felony disfranchisement laws in the US. And we couldn't get a remedy that we wanted in US courts. And I became aware of two particular treaties that the US has ratified. One is the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, and one is ICCPR, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. And I learned that because the US has ratified these treaties, that there is a mechanism called treaty review, where the state has to go before the committee and show how it is meeting their obligations under the treaty. And again, the treaty being under our domestic law, the highest law of the land.
Yes.
And this process allows for civil society to weigh in and say, this is our understanding of how the obligations are being implemented or not being implemented. So for me, it offered a tool to talk about the impact of the felony disfranchisement laws in the US, particularly on people of color who are disproportionately affected by these laws. And so we share the impact before the committee. We get great observations from the committee about how the state, the US, is not living up to its treaty obligations. Here are the specific things it needs to do to meet
Do.
its treaty obligations.
So
And then we
real
can bring that back.
action items, serious
Action
action items.
items. Then we can bring those back home. And those could be part of our advocacy before election officials or advocacy to the public. And so it allows us to have a broader human rights discussion around the issues that the treaties address. And so, I hear what you're saying about concern about compliance, but I just want to share that it's a great tool for civil society to lift up the issues that the treaty represents, to galvanize civil society around those issues, and to be a great frame in which we can engage from the local to the national on the issues as well.
Well, this has been really illuminating and really shined a light on some of the issues that have to do with women, which is our theme for the month, but also gave us a lot of food for thought for some of the ways that other organizations can emulate what you're doing, particularly in your three-pronged approach. When you describe it, even though it's a narrative, the almost a graphic comes to mind that we can see exactly how we organizing, talking points, communication, education, and then eventually fuel for litigation. Each fuels the other side, the other part of what you're doing, because you are a very impactful organization.
As you mentioned, the League of Women Voters from the very beginning have been part of the push for Equal Rights Amendment and ensure that women are treated equally under the law. And here in the United States, we finally have the ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment. And the challenge, however, is that while the requisite number of states have ratified the Equal Rights Amendment, which was passed by the Congress in 1972, and it took us this long to ratify, we finally got there. It has yet to be published, but it is indeed now the 28th Amendment to the United States Constitution, which is a very exciting win for us who've been pushing for the Equal Rights Amendment over many decades. And, we
Congratulations.
talked, thank you. And we talked before about how the League of Women Voters works with the UN. And one of the things that we are currently working on that I wanted to mention is we have an ask of the UN. And that is to recognize the 20th Amendment, the ERA, in the Global Gender Equality Constitutional Database, because that would support our advocacy that the ERA is now ratified. And even though it is not yet published within the US, it was recognized as ratified by President Biden earlier this year. And we would like to see that this new amendment, which is so important to women, be recognized also by the United Nations. And this would mean a lot for us in lifting up this fantastic accomplishment.
Well, it is a wonderful accomplishment, but
Yeah, it speaks to the need
congratulations.
of the tenacity
It
sometimes
does.
that we need to.
And you know what? This is the bigger message that you're giving now to everybody listening, because everybody listening is working so hard in their mission and they're seeing it develop so slowly in their own mind because they can't imagine why people don't just jump on their bandwagon so clear. How could you not have an equal rights amendment? Makes no sense, right? But stay in there, guys. This is what Marcia is saying to you. And your message to the UN is now loud and clear.
Thank you.